Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 818. It's the 4th of July, 2017. On the podcast today, Paul Vonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy, ANGS. And Paul goes over current progress and talks about UK Oil and Gas's recent successful exploration results at a neighbouring location to their Brockham asset. It's quite exciting there because they're hoping to be in production. This is Angus this summer. Also on the podcast today, Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion. That's VRS ticker in the graphene space, that is. And Neil reflects on some of the highlights from the previous financial year and also discusses what's to come. An exciting time for Versarion as well. And João Andrade, CEO, and David Bridgeland, CFO of Widecells Group, that's WDC, discussed the agreement they've signed to roll out Cellplan in Brazil. I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Vonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy. ANGS is the ticker there. Paul, thanks for coming back on.
Justin, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah, well, listen, I know about the company, but for people listening right now who are not quite sure as to what you do, can you give them a brief summary, Paul, as to what you're all about there at Angus?
Well, thank you. In short, Angus Energy is a UK, fully UK-focused oil and gas production company. We have our assets in southern England, primarily in the Weald Basin, where we have two production licenses, one exploration licenses, and we're looking to put basically this. We've been producing from these sites for years, but what we found is that there is a layer that historically all companies have always drilled through. It's called the Kimmeridge. It's a Kimmeridge shale and limestone. We call it a hybrid reservoir. That is naturally fractured, and we're looking to produce from it this summer and basically open a whole new play in southern England, where we have the two production licenses and one exploration licenses. So in a summary, it's a small company at the moment, but we're sitting on potentially a huge transformational asset for the UK.
Yeah, well, listen, I think of late, you know, the share price as we talk is rising quite strongly, up 6.2%. And I suppose it's a lot to do with people looking at, and it's odd that I'm bringing you on to talk about another company, but I suppose people are catching the attention at the moment is UK Oil and Gas, because they've been drilling just down the road from you. I'm just looking at the map here, and it's literally not far away. They're on Pedal 234, and your license at Brockham is PL 235. So take us through the news they sort of released, Paul, because I'm sure you keep keeping a keen eye on it, and why it's significant for you, please.
Now, I think it's very important, the note that you made there. They have Pedal 234, which means it's an exploration license, and we have PL, a production license. And I think that's the key differentiator between the two things, because we have been following it with a lot of interest, because what we're drilling is actually, it's identical, it's the same play. What we're looking at here is historically when you had like an oil field, they used to be structurally trapped. You know, there needs to be a place where the oil could get trapped and couldn't escape from. And they're usually, you know, quite small. So only one oil company can have it. So you know, if something is good happening with one oil company, that doesn't reflect on another oil company. In this case, what we're looking at is an unconventional reservoir. That means that it's below everything, and it is thick and it stretches everywhere. And this still needs to be proven as unconventional, but that is our currently hypothesis. And that means that where they're drilling at Bradford Bridge at the moment, they're coming up with the same results that came up with Horsehill and that we saw when we drilled in January Brockham this year. This is all the same reservoir. So it all started 3 years ago now, when we are the company that originally drilled the Horsehill well, Mm-hmm. And that's where we found these shales. And these shales looked really interesting. We started to spend more time and effort on it. And then last year, the Horsell well was tested for the first time. And because it was a shale and we're not going to frack, we said, okay, how are we going to do this? So we were very focused on the limestones. We said, okay, we'll dissolve the limestones. You create some area that the oil can flow into from the shale, and then you produce oil. But that was such a huge success, that well test at Horsell. It flowed almost 1,400 barrels a day from 40-meter section, that we thought that was fantastic. We were still private at the time. We sold out of Horsell, concentrated solely on our Brockham asset, which is just 5 kilometers to the west of it. And because we have a production license there, we're the operator, we're the majority owner, we said, okay, we're going to replicate it. So in January this year, we drilled the Brockham sidetrack and really put, you know, the most modern logging technology that you can into that well to look at, you know, what does the reservoir look like. And what we found out there, the reason why it flowed at Horsell and that people miss it in the past, because it's not a porous reservoir, it's a fractured reservoir. And because it's fractured, all the oil is hidden in the fractures between, you know, the tide limestone and the shales. Mm-hmm. And what we saw at Brockham is that 200 meters of the 400 meter Kimmeridge layer is naturally fractured. It's through the limestones and shales that are interbedded on top of each other. So we come to the name of a hybrid reservoir. It's like a shale and the reservoir in one. But what is super important, it's all about the fractures. 200 meters fractured system at Brockham we're going to put into production. Now, we waiting on approval from the regulator, from the oil and gas regulator, to say, go ahead. Well, we're expecting that, you know, imminently. What is happening at Broadford Bridge is that they're doing the coring. That means that they're not, you know, they're not pulverizing the stone where they're going deeper. They're getting beautiful, nice cylinders out, which is a time-consuming process. But when they come to surface, what have they seen? And this is what we got from our peers, is that the fractures are completely filled with hydrocarbons. Well, that is exactly what we've been saying at Brockham. And now, because they have the physical proof in their hands, you know, what we're looking at is potentially a big unconventional reservoir stretching over the whole wheel basin. And what we'll be looking at, you know, which are the sections where the temperatures were good enough to cook the oil. So what is the maturity? Well, we know at Brockham it was identical copy to Horsell, where it flowed perfectly. So we're in a great position and we're really, you know, happy with the results that are coming through.
Yeah, and I think I think the reason you've been rising of late, your price has gone up, because I think people are sort of starting to understand the value of a production license, and you are in the same area as UK Oil and Gas. And I'm comparing market caps. UK Oil and Gas is over 110 million. You are 40 million. And we've just experienced the problems people can have going from exploration to production. At Wrestle, and I know a lot of well-known companies in the AIM space were involved in that, Egdon and Unijack Oil, and they went for a second planning application. It was turned down yesterday. So, you know, people can't underestimate the amount of time and effort it takes to get from exploration to production license, doesn't it? It does take a lot of hassle and time, doesn't it?
It does. You know, this is England. This is the UK. This is an extremely well-regulated environment. But it also comes with a drawback that before, you know, you're fully allowed as an oil and gas company to produce from a certain site, there's a huge amount of checks and balances that you have to go through. There's first the exploration to production license that historically would take, you know, 2-3 years. I think in the current environment, it might even take longer. And that is just the process. So for each site that you need to do it, then it before you find something and you convert it to commercial cash flows that you can, you know, can further grow with and share with your shareholders, there's just a long, long, long wait. And what we're looking at is we have it, we're just waiting on one approval. The moment that's in, we perforate it and we put it into production. We put a small animation of that on our website. It's very simple. It's conventional oil production and there's no fracking involved. It's pressurized, it's naturally fractured, and it's a really good reservoir, mm-hmm. and it's putting it into production. And that will take time for all players involved. Just our neighbors and where we are a minority partner, Holmwood, just to put it into perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a commercial forest, you know? This is a forest to be cut down, you know? That's what it is for. The planning application to drill a single well at that site has been put in place 9 years ago. 9 years, mm-hmm. And we're just about you know, dare to start. We're looking to drill that by the end of this year. But that means that you need to have a lot of patience. And with our two production licenses in the wheel, we can kind of, while we're, you know, scaling up significantly, because we'd like to do more, we have these two sites producing strong cash flows for the company. So we can be patient and we can do it and we can create value and grow further with the assets that we already have.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Okay, excellent stuff. And so essentially you've got one sort of hurdle to get over, and that's just approval from the ONG. And you reckon that should be, what, in the next month or so, or how soon will that be?
Well, we've provided the Oil and Gas Authority with all the information they require. There's no set timeline for it, but in our discussions with them, we're progressing nicely, and that could drop, you know, any moment, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, but you're hoping to aim for start producing this summer, yeah?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. No, we're very confident that will happen.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Paul, listen. In summary, if someone's not following you right now, and you think they should be following you, can you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please?
Well, they should, because we're going to put Brockham into production. That is the first commercial production field in the wheel from this Kimmeridge later. That's number one. We've got a proven 200-meter net-free fractured system down there. Mm. And thirdly, we haven't even talked about it, Justin, but we're about to drill Litsi shortly. We're just waiting on the rig. The moment Rick is there, we're going to drill Litsi. And Litsi is at the extension of the wheel, but we're going to increase production there from the reservoir that we've been producing with for years. We're going to get a nice 400-plus barrel a day producer out of that at a super low OPEX. I don't think we're going to spend more than $40 a barrel. That in itself will be transformational for the cash flow of the company. The company for years to come will be fully self-funded. So, you know, all salaries, overhead, business development will basically all be covered by that well. Brockham is just all extra. Litsi in itself is a company maker for all the budgeting purposes. And we're just waiting on the rig. The moment the rig is there, then we can start drilling. 4-week job, straight into production.
Marvellous. Paul, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again soon in the not-too-distant future, when maybe you'll be producing by then. Paul, good to chat to you.
Absolutely, Justin. Pleasure. Thank you so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Versarian. That's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, so yesterday you released your final results for the year ended the 31st of March, and some good things to go through there. I was reading with interest yesterday, and you seem like you're very busy at the moment. But before we go into that, Neil, as always, for people listening right now and haven't heard of your company, could you explain what you do, please?
Okay, so Versarian is a materials company. We're at the very cutting edge of science. We're bringing the technologies which will enable the devices that we all want in the future. So we're an enabler for all of those things that are going on.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you didn't mention it, sort of, but the graphene is really the hot product, isn't it, that you're involved with. And you know, I think when you hear, it's like you are in one of the hot sectors that you can liken, I suppose, to blockchain, to pretty much virtual reality, where all the big industry players are trying to get a foothold in. And there's been lots of articles talking about the wonder of graphene. I mean, are you finding right now, because it's still really at an early stage, graphene, isn't it? But are you seeing, you know, serious developments along sort of towards a commercial sort of outcome here?
Yeah, yeah. So graphene's 10 years old, so it's not a new thing. What we're seeing now is in the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen a move away from the laboratory into real-world products. And all of my time at the moment is being spent on graphene. It's being spent on trying to spin lots of plates with lots and lots of big companies, trying to get them to make the move to put it into production.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So for us, it's a really exciting time. It's like another industrial revolution, Justin. It's like it must have been when they first found steel or silicon or any of these massive products that we take for granted now.
Yeah, and I suppose, like you said, with big companies, you know, people will be paid a lot. They are a bit wary to take that step into an unknown area, I suppose. But isn't it true that the people that do that, though, you know, the cutting-edge people, the people that are ahead of the curve, the ahead of the rest, those are the ones that reap the benefits? I mean, are the companies you talk to, are there some that really want to go for it? And is it down to size? Because I know you sort of you're talking to all different kinds of companies, and a lot of that is confidential. But do you find that the bigger companies tend to be more conservative?
I think there's a generalization that bigger companies are more conservative. They have more at stake. They have massive production lines which they would have to change if they were to change their products. But having said that, some of the really big companies are really quick to move if they can see that there's a market advantage or there's some kind of really big reason, you know. So, you know, one of the things that we're talking to our customers about at the moment is, you know, the world is changing very quickly. We're moving towards smart devices. We're moving towards things that didn't even exist, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. And now there's a real appetite to look at everything we do and seeing if there's a better way of doing it. So some of these big companies are actually moving very, very quickly, a lot quicker than they ever used to.
Yeah. And just before we hit record, you said, I said, how's things going? You said, I'm very busy at the moment. I've never been so busy in my entire life, which is a good thing, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing a lot of traveling at the moment. We're talking to a lot of customers. It just doesn't seem to be enough hours in a day, to be honest. And, you know, trying to get a work-life balance is almost impossible. And what we're trying to do is, you know, we don't want to miss any opportunities. It's very hard in our game to know which is going to be the first company to move. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to keep them all alive all at the same time. And that means that, you know, it's really tough on me. It's really tough on the team. But we've just got to dig deep and just, you know, get on with it and get through this next phase. You know, the big thing for this company at the moment is to win another big contract like we had in January. That was for a really, really big player, and that went really, really well. If we can land another one of those, then, you know, the company is away.
Yeah. And I mean, you says here in the operational highlights, final results, your pipeline of graphene inquiries expanding rapidly, including inquiries received from America, Europe, Mexico, Japan, and South Korea. How close are you to, you know, would you say you are to signing one of these big sort of transformational sort of contracts? And is it, you can't reveal too much, obviously, but is it at home? Is it abroad? What can you reveal?
I honestly don't know, Justin, to be honest. We've probably got about 120 very, very large companies. As I said to you before, I'm going to do this phone call and I'm off to a massive company this afternoon to talk to those guys about your next steps. We don't know where the next inquiry is going to come from or where the next big order is going to come from or development contract. We've got so many things going on at the moment. We're probably dealing with about 120 different companies across the world at the moment, trying to make sure that we pick and we prioritize as best we can who's going to be the next one. And for us, as you quite rightly said, you know, the next move for us is totally transformational. It takes us into a completely different field. We're quickly establishing ourselves both with central government and with customers as being the go-to place for graphene now. And having our products, taking that little bit of extra time and having them all independently certified means that we've got a huge advantage when we're talking to these big companies that we can actually prove what we're doing.
Yeah. Go on.
I mean, there's an old adage that the pioneers get the arrows and the settlers get the land. Well, we're very much trying to be settlers. We're quite happy for other people to rush off and prove things, and we'll just mop up as the demand is there.
Yeah. Okay. So, and this company, I understand you can't reveal too much, but this company, would I have heard of this company?
Oh, yeah. Just everybody in the world uses their products on a day-to-day basis, and they're very interested. We've got a real opportunity through one of our partners who we worked with for a couple of years. And, you know, I always think that sometimes when you do a favor for someone, that favor comes back tenfold. Well, this is exactly that in operation. Okay. These guys are highly enthusiastic. We haven't got long with them. We've got to be able to really knock their aspirations apart and just show them what we can do. And we're in a great place to be able to do that.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that's exciting. All right, so just looking back over the last year, so what are some of the things you're most proud of in the last year then, Neil?
Well, obviously, revenues are continuing to grow, up 35% to 6 million. This is a company that was pre-revenue 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that only includes half of our latest acquisition, which added about 2.5 million to those sales. We're seeing the oil and gas business, which has hit us pretty hard over the last couple of years, it has done for a lot of people, starting to come back. And we've got a very, very strong order book with our Total Carbide factory. So their sales over the period, you know, the peak when we first bought it were 4.6 million and they're down to sort of just over 2 million now, but climbing rapidly. So we're looking forward to a bit of a rebound on that, although we remain cautious. And we've managed to operate the company definitely at an EBITDA level at a lower cost than it was last year, despite the increase in the amount of effort that we're putting in. So we're really pleased with what we've done. We've got huge amounts of progress in the business. We've obviously done two acquisitions as well. And it was only a couple of months ago, and it seems longer than that, that we brought the University of Cambridge graphene spin out on board. And that's what we're talking about this afternoon with this big company. So, yeah, huge amounts of progress for the group.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, and looking forward, I suppose, what are you most excited about, Neil?
All of my effort at the moment is about landing one of these big orders or one of these big big companies. And for me, that's the most exciting thing that's going on at the moment, just the breadth and depth of the inquiries that we're getting from all over the world. We've got huge opportunities overseas over the next 4 or 5 months to go and visit really big players. And not only that, we're bringing on our own products as well. So we've just launched or just about to launch a brand new 3D printing material. There are other people in the market, but this material outperforms them, and we've got some independent test data around that. So the guys are just getting ready to launch that now. And for a small company like ours to have all of these things going on at once is a testament to the amount of effort that's going in at the moment.
Yeah, so just a little bit of detail on that. So 3D printing, and so how does that work, and why does it outperform other competitors?
So what we've got here is we're using our graphene product, our nanine, and we've mixed it into an ABS, which has meant that we're sort of getting 10 to 20% improvements in strength. And one of the downsides, one of the reasons that 3D printing isn't used more is that the materials aren't strong enough. So if we can add strength to those materials, we can see further and further applications. There were some statistics out the other day, and I've got a meeting tomorrow with the aerospace guys over at the National Composite Center in Bristol, where they reckon that 50% of a plane will be produced by 3D printing very soon. Because they're not produced in very high volume, but they require huge amounts of customization, so it doesn't make sense to build tooling for it. So they want to 3D print a lot of the parts. And one of the key limiting factors at the moment is the availability of material. So we've got several products that we're currently in process with, and we're launching the first ones. So it's huge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Big year ahead. Okay. Well, Neil, as you know, every day in the podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies. You've been in that list quite a few times. But for people not following you and like where you're at and the sector you're in here and the space you're occupying, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Absolutely. So the first reason is that we're in the ideal position to see huge growth because the materials that we're producing are really needed throughout the whole of industry. And so it's a very exciting time for us and huge amounts of demand. Second one is that we've now got huge amounts of credibility, and we've got independent test data, and we're in a position where we can start to say that we're one of the leaders in this particular field. And the third one is that I'm the second largest shareholder, and therefore my interests are totally in line with those of the other shareholders.
Excellent stuff. Neil, have a good day. Hope that meeting goes well. And who knows, we may be, you know, maybe reading about that meeting in an RNS in a couple of months' time. Who knows?
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Anthrad, CEO, and David Bridgeland, CFO of Wide Sales Group. That's WDC ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Good morning.
Hi, Justin. Yeah, good to meet you.
You too. We haven't had you on before, David. We'll have a chat in a bit about your involvement here. But firstly, Joe, a quick summary. In a sentence, what is Wide Sales all about for people not aware of you?
Well, Wide Sales, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services. We have developed the world's first stem cell insurance plan to cover the costs associated with stem cell treatments, which is a form of insurance that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. And this has the ability to resolve a global problem. We have another division, which we call white cells, and that's where we conduct stem cell research. And we are also completing work on all facility up in the University of Manchester, where we'll also be able to start storing stem cells from babies' umbilical cord, cord bloods and cord tissue to protect families against future illnesses. And the third strand of our business is Wide Academy, where we want to become thought leaders on stem cell technology. And the mandate for Wide Academy is to provide accurate scientific and medical information to healthcare professionals so that they can recommend stem cell storage services and ultimately our stem cell insurance plan as well.
Marvelous. Okay, so I'm moving on from today's news. Quite exciting there. You've secured a second definitive agreement for CellPlan, which will see your first of its kind stem cell healthcare insurance plan and medical concierge service offered to both new and existing clients of Hemacord Clinica Medica Limited. So can you give us a bit more information on Hemacord and what this agreement means for the group, please, Joe?
Yeah, so first of all, Hemacords, they are one of the leading cord blood storage facilities in Brazil. Brazil is an emerging market for the cord blood banking industry. It's growing exponentially over the past few years in certain regions of Brazil, namely Rio de Janeiro, São Paulo, and southern Brazil as well. And in terms of the group, what it means to us, it represents the ability for us to scale up the business quickly. We have launched the product in the UK last month. We have the ability to launch the product in Europe over the course of the next few months, and we are now entering agreements outside Europe. This one with Brazil and others that we are in discussions in other continents as well. So it just shows that we have a business model that allows us to tap into opportunities that exist throughout the world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned there, you know, there's a revenue stream here. It creates a new revenue stream, but also like a new area outside Europe. And does this region, you know, is it particularly significant for the group?
Yes, because the interesting thing about Brazil, which is also true for China, for India, and a few other markets, is that clients in these countries are used to paying an annual storage, whilst in Europe, for example, families are used to prepay 30 years storage of their stem cells, which means the cord blood banks are freezing the stem cells for 30 years. And in Brazil, families are used to paying around £150 to keep the stem cells frozen every year. So these cord blood banks, such as Hemacord, have very high retention rates. And also because families are paying annual storage, it means that they understand the value of the service that they have bought, that they have purchased, which means that the likelihood of them renewing the insurance policy is very high as well. That's how we are looking at it. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to tap into Brazil. And because it's an emerging market, we can grow together as the market is growing.
I understand. Moving over to David, sort of reflective of the growing profile of Wide Cells, David, you're now working full-time for the group. This surely is a good indicator of things to come, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I've been working with Joao for the last 18 months and worked with him to take it through to the IPO back in July last year. And we spent the last 10, 11 months since the IPO building all arms of the business, and two of them are just starting to generate revenue. The CellPlan business, which is the health insurance business, launched last month, and we've obviously announced the second cord blood bank that's going to be offering our products to their customers. We've got the research facility up in Manchester, which is where we'll be conducting all our research, but also our day-to-day cord blood processing and storage for customers in the UK and Europe. And that's about to receive its license from the Human Tissue Authority. So we're going to kick that off very shortly. And clearly, Now's the time where I need to be spending more time on the business as we start to generate sales and revenues and we're building the business. So it's the right time for me to commit myself full time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, look at the stats here. You've made a little dent, but there's a long way to go because, you know, 3 million cord blood samples are held in storage in 500 cord blood storage facilities across the world. So you now have agreements with two of those facilities. Can we expect more of these agreements?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We've been talking to a number of cord blood banks and we've got a number in the pipeline and we hope to announce those in the coming weeks and months.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Finally, guys, you've got an investor event due to take place next week where you, David, and also Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. Peter Hollands, will participate. Now, can anyone come to this? And is there a question and answer session, or is it just a sort of you just monologuing, basically? But can people get involved and ask questions?
Yeah, so we are having the private investor events in Shard Capital's office, which is in 20 Fenchurch Street, Wednesday 12 at 5:30 p.m. And we have included in our RNS announcement yesterday the email address. If an investor wants to participate, it's it just sends an email to that email address and we'll confirm the participation and then it's to bring the ID to the building. But it's an open event and we are going to be discussing the strategy for our three business divisions and an update because we are leaving now this, we are in this inflection point. We are moving from R&D to commercial reality. We've started to launch our products, starting to generate revenues this month. There are much more business to come. There are other opportunities, and we want to realign investors in our strategy on the three businesses. And the Q&A session at the end, where investors will be able to ask questions to myself directly and David on the finance side as well. And we are going to have Peter there in case there are investors that want to ask more technical questions and even understand more about the research project that we are involved or our technology at the University of Manchester.
Marvellous, guys. It's good to chat to you and hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much, Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, just had Paul Vonk on, Angus Energy, ANGS. At four, 7digital, that's 7dig. At three, New Oil and Gas, that's N-U-O-G. I said 7dig before, that's 7dig, of course. At two, Providence Resources, PVR. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was UK Oil and Gas, UCOG. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning. At five, 888 Energy, that's issue of equity. At four, Great Western Mining Corp, that's GWMO, that's the M1 update. At three, N4 Pharma, filing of patent. At two, again, 888 Energy, iSwine 2 operations update. And number one, most liked RNS on the platform this morning was from MySquare, M-Y-S-Q, and it says MySquare achieves run rate operating break even. I think that's, like they said, they would target. And I thought, this is towards the end of the financial year now, so for them. And they did say they'd hit that target, and they've hit it. So well done there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Much appreciate us.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.